Tell me now, do you want it? Cause these dancing feet don't cry to the rhythm that cry for you. And every Saturday night that you ain't keep my tears.
As the whole world expected, Packers lost to Philadelphia. It was 22-10. And now, our final post-game show closes with Jason Wilde. Better than saying good morning, Jason. How about good evening?
Good evening. How you doing, Homer?
I'm doing okay. I mean, I didn't think they were going to win.
Everyone expected?
Yeah, everyone. Yeah.
Always.
Well, I mean, like, okay, say it's... So, on the show Friday, we got four callers. And Gary Ellison took the Packers because he played for the Packers, but...
I didn't realize you had enough time for that in only an hour.
We don't. I wanted to do the show. I said, anybody, call in and say you're going to root the Packers. Then if they win, no one could do it. So what, 2%, whatever. The game turned out how close to what you expected, not with the specifics, but in general.
Yeah, I mean, look, I thought it would be lower scoring because I thought they were two good defenses. I thought Jordan Love would have trouble against that defense. I did not think he would be able to play the way he did against the Cowboys last year. But I thought it was going to be a game that would go down to the wire. Like, I thought that, you know, it would be, I don't know, 24-22, like last week's score was, or 21-19, or something like that. And look, you can't, like... First of all, before I say things that sound like excuses for them, let's be very clear. They just weren't that good, period. They were a good football team. They were not a very good football team. They were not a great football team. They went 0-6 against the Eagles, the Lions, and the Vikings, all of whom are better than them. So, you know, did they take a step forward this season? I think they did. Did Jordan Love regress? I don't. I don't think so. I think he took a smaller step forward than you would have liked. But I've been saying this since last season ended that I really thought with 19 games of film on him that opposing defenses would have a better idea of how to neutralize him, and I think we saw that occur. Now, again, is that like catastrophic for them long term? I don't think so, but they got their work cut out for them this off season, and quite frankly, the vibes are going to be a heck of a lot different. Like last year, it was all puppy dogs and ice cream and seashells and balloons, as Al McGuire used to say, because they finished hot, they won a playoff game. I said at Summerfest that I thought that they would be a better team, which I think they were. Their defense was a hell of a lot better. Their running game was a hell of a lot better. And their passing game had moments, but certainly Jordan Love experienced the growing pains that second-year starters experience. But I thought that they could finish with a better record and go less, not as far in the playoffs, and those are the things that happened. But I think, you know, we have to take – a hard look at, you know, some of their failures. And one of them, to me anyway, is how their offense just sort of limped down the stretch. And I think that that is a function, in my opinion, of them making adjustments to their run game to suit a stud running back, a workhorse running back, a dude who got 300 carries during the regular season, which for most running backs, that had become unheard of. But they used a different blocking scheme. They had Jordan Love in the shotgun a lot more. And I think their play action pass game suffered. And I think what, you know, when I heard Matt LaFleur after that Vikings game say that guys have to win their one-on-one matchups, referring to receivers, I thought, oh no, it's Mike McCarthy. And I love Big Mike. But one of the things about Mike McCarthy's offense that we frequently heard was exactly that, because that's how his offense was designed. The whole point of a Matt LaFleur offense is that it schemes guys open so so guys don't have to win their one-on-ones. The scheme gets them open. And frankly, with a quarterback whose accuracy has been known to be inconsistent, having guys wide open means that he doesn't have to be quite as precise with where he puts the football. And so I put that on the coaches struggling to find the answers there. I think Jordan Love, again, I think he pushed some boundaries and some limits after playing as well as he did down the stretch last year. I think our expectations for him probably went a little bit too high because of how he played during an incredible heater and because he got a $55 million a year contract, which, again, if we're being honest, let's take a look at the other guys that got paid this offseason in terms of young quarterbacks who haven't accomplished as much. Is Tua got roughly the same amount. I don't feel that great about him if I'm a Dolphins fan. Trevor Lawrence got paid roughly the same amount. Definitely don't feel good about him. I feel better about Jordan Love than those two guys. But the fact of the matter is he didn't play well enough, and he certainly didn't play well enough today. So you put that all together, I think they're an improved team. Their defense was clearly better. Their run game was clearly better. But they got a lot of stuff to figure out. And while I know there are fans that are very frustrated that want us to turn up the heat on Matt LaFleur's seat, I think that he has probably earned the benefit of the doubt and the opportunity to go into this offseason and figure it all out. So next year they are way better with everything they have because they were just not as good as the best teams in the NFC. And we kept making excuses for them, and we kept saying, well, if they just do this and we see glimpses. Well, good teams don't just deliver glimpses. Good teams deliver full performances. And their defense was really, really good tonight. Kept them in a game that they could have gotten blown out of with the way things were going. But they just offensively, for a team that we were feeling so good about offensively last year coming out of the season, I mean, I just feel like the feeling is so vastly different after what we saw today.
Jason, if Matt LaFleur is this offensive guy, I just don't understand how having a running back who's so good would make the offense worse, unless it's not part of his scheme and he can't adjust his scheme to this. And if that's the case, he should have told Goody, we don't want Jacobs. I need somebody like Aaron Jones.
Yeah, no, I think so here's, and again, we're so lucky to have Bulaga and Tausch because they know so much more football than any of the rest of us, especially when it comes to offensive line play. But Brian said this on our show, and I'm sure he said it at some point on the Homer Hour too, that they really transitioned their run game from a zone scheme to what's called a duo scheme,
right?
Because that's what was better for Josh Jacobs. And you know, I always go back to this, and every offense evolves, and every offense has to try new things because if you stay stagnant, teams figure you out, and you're not going to be as great as you think you are. But I look at this defense, I look at this offense, and I go back to something Matt Hasselbeck said to us when they first hired LaFleur and talked about, and I think Joe Thomas did it too, because he had this offense in Cleveland with Kyle Shanahan, that the whole concept is the quarterback takes the snap from under center, and when he takes his first three steps as he turns his back to the defense, either hand the ball off or fake the handoff, it always looks exactly the same for those first three steps, and it freezes all those defenders. And instead, I mean, I'll have to go look at all the numbers once they're all in, but God, they must have been in shotgun more than half the time. And I know some of it at some point was because of Jordan's knee and the groin injury, but my understanding is it was also because Josh Jacobs liked it better. And so I don't think we can say, well, Matt LaFleur doesn't know what the hell he's doing because he couldn't make an effective adjustment to changing his team's running style to suit his new running back. I think that is the type of thing that is such a significant overhaul that if you are going to make changes, you tend to have to make them throughout an entire offseason as you adjust your system. So I think he made some adjustments. He certainly made adjustments to the run game that allowed it to be so productive with a stud workhorse running back. But I think they always kind of struggled to figure out, okay, how do we make our play pass game as effective when we're running things differently than we had before? And I just don't feel like they ever really got an answer for that. And again, if you have a great quarterback, which for all of his faults that people think about, Aaron Rodgers is one of the all-time greats. And, you know, I got very frustrated, and I know there were some people that have been, you know, kind of hitching their wagon to Jordan Love being awesome, and that's great, you know, if that's what you believe. I think he's good, but I've had the benefit of watching two of the best to ever do it in NFL history, right? One guy that's already in camp and another one is going to be, and that's really hard. And we saw it so much that we then start to think, well, anybody, you know, anybody can do that, because we didn't have to watch all the other crappy quarterbacks like most other organizations have, that most other beat writing corps have to watch. And Jordan Love is not a crappy quarterback, not at all. But he sure as heck isn't as good as the lineage before him, and he's got a hell of a long way to go to get to where he wants to. Do I think he's capable of that? I do, because he's gone from a guy that I didn't see make a lot of wow throws to a guy who clearly has improved a ton and has the ability to make the wow throws that the Favres and the Rodgerses did. But you can't throw three picks like he did with the game. And he's now thrown five picks in his last two playoff games, right? Really in his last five quarters of playoff football.
Yeah, and some really stupid ones.
And look, Aaron Rodgers did not play well enough in some playoff games either, right? I mean,
yep.
But I would say other than the 49ers loss in 21, when they were at home as the number one seed and they lost 13-10 and the 49ers didn't even score an offensive touchdown, I have a hard time thinking of a playoff game that the Packers lost where Rodgers squandered the kind of defensive effort that they got tonight. And so to me, you know, more often than not, their failures in the Rodgers era were largely at the feet of the defense. And tonight, when you get one touchdown, and really, let's be honest, Josh Jacobs did all the work there, right? I mean, that 31-yard run had no business being a 31-yard run. Like, he broke like four tackles. He carried dudes to the goal line. I mean, he's ruled a touchdown initially and then obviously changed to a ball at the one, and then he went in on the next play. But, like, even with the injuries to the wide receivers, not having Watson, Dobbs, or Reed, you know, even before those injuries, you know, obviously they didn't have Watson going into the game, I didn't see much from their passing game that made me think against a really good defense, they could, against a group playing, you know, two shell defense to keep everything in front of them, they did not show the execution ability to be able to go 10, 12 plays down the field. And this is what defenses do. And if you can't answer that, then you're in big trouble. Now, I would say the one thing that I would make what probably amounts to an excuse for them with is they lost Elgton Jenkins and they were screwed. Like, I think Rob Domofsky had a stat from ESPN Stats and Info that the Packers offensive line played 830 snaps together. They're starting five. That was the most of any offensive line this season to play together. And as soon as Elgton Jenkins gets that stinger, and then, like, and you know, Travis Glover is a nice kid. Like, I can't tell you, I have this weird idiosyncrasy that I always, you know, whoever walks by me in the locker room, I always say hello to them and ask them how they're doing. And he could not, like, I don't know if anybody else even talked to Travis Glover once training camp ended. You know, he was going to be basically a redshirt freshman this year, They didn't plan on playing him at all. He had played, I think, 13 offensive snaps before tonight. And for him to go in against the number one defense in the league, I mean, there's a reason why he committed three penalties. He was in over his head. And then they bench him for Kadeem Telfert, who battles but commits a penalty of his own. And, you know, they're not clearing space for Jacobs. They're not protecting Love. I mean, losing him, as much as it was bad to lose all those wide receivers, it was almost as if they couldn't function offensively. And so my point is that, you know, do I still think that this team is, the arrow is pointing up? I do. And I know somebody made the point earlier in the show that, and we, Tausch and I had actually talked about this during the week. Someone had brought it up through the Carbless talk and text line on our show, that the Packers have now been the number seven seed each of the last years. If they hadn't expanded the playoffs, they wouldn't have made the playoffs each of these 2 years. But I do think that it's, you know, it's like that old Tom Petty song, Learning to Fly. Like, I still think this team is learning to fly. And they got off the ground down the stretch last year, and they were soaring. And then this year, it was kind of like they would take off, and then they would have to come back down. And it was almost like they just could never get a nice, smooth flight. And whether or not it's going to be smoother next year, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, and I've said this from, I mean, and Chewy will back me up on this, the NFL, it is a process to becoming a Super Bowl contending team. And his teams with Favre, they went through it. And this team is now going through it. Now, the Packers of 2010 arrived a year early by winning three straight road games and their quarterback playing masterfully down the stretch and then in the first two playoff games and then in the Super Bowl, right? And Jordan Love didn't do that. But the team that, if they were following the progression, it was 2011 that they should have arrived and gone to a Super Bowl. And what did they do? They went 15-1. Rodgers won his first MVP. Like, they had a chance to go back-to-back because they'd arrived a year early. This team, I never thought they were going to arrive early this year and get to the Super Bowl. I just never believed that. And I Tausch was, hey, whoever wins this game is going to the Super Bowl. I didn't believe that. And what I saw from Philly, I'm not convinced they're going to the Super Bowl because they beat the Packers. But I do believe that the Packers made incremental progress this year. And as pissed off as you are as a fan, or as disappointed as you are as a fan, I do think this is part of the growing process. And Tausch hates it when I say this. And quite frankly, Maddie and Sydney hear it all the time too, but it's because I believe it so earnestly. Growth is not linear. You are going to have setbacks. You are going to fail. And what do you do about it when you do have that setback and when you do fail? And, you know, I wasn't in Philly, but Wes Hodquist sent me what Josh Jacobs said after the game. And I just love that guy. Man, he has got the mentality that that team should take on his personality, because it immediately was, what do I have to do to get this team over the hump? What is it that we aren't doing that we should be doing to make that difference? And if you get enough of those guys in that locker room, they will make the improvements. And maybe next year it's an NFC championship game berth. Maybe they beat the Lions and somehow win the division next year. Who knows? But the pieces feel like they are starting to form. But I would argue this, as much as Goody believes this is a young man's game, and he is right, there have to be some not quite as young men in your locker room who have kind of reached a maturity point in their careers that they can elevate their games. And we saw Xavier McKinney do that. He's in year five. Or just finished year five. We saw Josh Jacobs do that. He just finished year six in the league. But some of these other guys, if they're not going to go out and pay a wide receiver to be a number one, if they're not going to bring in T. Higgins, somebody's got to elevate to be that alpha at that position. They've got to have some guys that can, if it's not going to be Jair because he's not going to be back, they've got to have a shutdown corner. And is that something that Carrington Valentine can develop into so he can join the pantheon of Adam Timmerman, Mark Tauscher, Donald Driver as great seventh-round picks? Maybe, but they were not a good enough football team this year to get any further than they got today. And if you thought that they were better than what they ended up being, then that was probably a little green and gold glasses-y for you to think that way, because their shortcomings, when you lose all six of your games to teams above you in the standings, and when you do the same things in those games, getting behind early, making those handful of plays that cost you games, then you're not that good of a team. You're a good team, but not good enough.
Amongst all that you said, the only thing I think that needs to be added, and that is, if the Packers made progress, other teams made more. Like, Washington is clearly a player now with their quarterback. They just won on a field goal to hit the upright and went in. But Detroit's better. Minnesota's better. I mean, whatever the Packers are doing, they might be improving, and everything you say might be true, but it isn't factoring what hasn't occurred for a while, and that is other teams are getting better in a bigger way, either with coaches or players.
Yeah, but look, all right, so Detroit's going to lose Ben Johnson.
Right.
Right? Now, I don't know who they're going to hire to replace him, but and I don't know how good Ben Johnson's going to be as a head coach. I know nothing about him other than the fact that he is a brilliant offensive mind and an unbelievably good play caller. And one of the reasons why Dan Campbell is viewed as such a great coach with his, you know, kneecap biting and everything else is for all his bravado and we're going for it on fourth down and we're tough and we're physical. For all that, he's got an offense that's really smart and really effective. And is that going to take a step back with someone else running it?
Probably.
Is Aaron Glenn going to get a head coaching job? Because let's use the Eagles as a example here, because Nick Sirianni went to a Super Bowl in year two, and then both of his coordinators, his offensive and defensive coordinators, got head coaching jobs. And then last year, they were ready to run him out of town on a rail in Philly. And he ended up having to fire both of those replacements, and then hired Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio this year, and they've been better again. Like, that, those guys in those positions matter. Certainly your quarterback matters. I'm a big Kevin O'Connell guy. Really, I'm a really big Kevin O'Connell guy. Like, if I was working in the Twin Cities media, I'm sure I would write a lot of positive words about him, because I love everything about him. I think he's a really smart offensive guy. I think he really does a great job of connecting with his players. Like, I think he's really, really good. What's his quarterback situation going to be next year? Are they going to pay Sam Darnold? Is Sam Darnold going to be able to replicate what he's done this season? Is it going to be J.J. McCarthy, who took a medical redshirt this year, that's his starting quarterback? Now, I would argue that it looks like Kevin O'Connell can make any quarterback pretty darn good, right? But, again, I don't know what they're going to look like next year. The Packers' free agent numbers, you know, Josh Myers is a free agent. Daniel Whelan, I believe, is a free agent. A few other guys are, but, like, there's nobody that's on that list that you're like, this guy's irreplaceable. So, and they've got a crap load of financial wherewithal in terms of the salary cap to, if Goody wants to be aggressive and try and replicate the Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs double dip, he's got the wherewithal to do it. So again, every criticism and frustration and disappointment of tonight is, I am not telling fans not to feel those things, but don't just dismiss the little kernels of optimism that you might have heard from LaFleur or Love tonight and say, well, that's just happy talk. I think there's more to it than that. But look, the quarterback, I like Jordan Love a lot. I'm not, you know, LaFleur said tonight. I love Jordan Love. I'm not sure I'd say I love him, but I really, really like him. And I think he's made of the right stuff. But he's got to make a big jump. He got paid like he was going to make a big jump. I think that's the cost of doing business in the NFL now. I don't think it's an exorbitant salary. But expectations, whether you like it or not, come with that number. And he did not rise to those expectations. Did he have injuries? Sure. Does he not have a clear-cut number one wide receiver that we kept saying it didn't matter, but it turns out that it might? Sure. But he, in year three, has to really and truly elevate his game in his third year as a starter for them to get farther than they have these first 2 years, for them to have a higher seed, for them to win a division and have a home game, and for them to have a legitimate shot of being a Super Bowl contender. Because I think in the very end, whether it was Tausch and me or whether it was fans, the folks that were looking at these guys going, they can make it to New Orleans, we were all to varying degrees fooling ourselves.
And now the question to me is, can they win the division next year? Or you end up being a 5 seed? You know, you can't be a 7 seed. One team has won as a 7 seed, one game, and that was the Packers. And I think the question next year is going to be, are they good enough to win the division? And my answer would be no. I wouldn't pick them to win the division. Would you?
Yeah, not today, but so many things can happen between now and the start of the season. We just went over some of them with the Lions and,
right,
and the Vikings. With this team, again, with what they've got for salary cap space, they're in a – I mean, the one great thing about being this young team with all these draft picks from 22, 23, and 24 is that none of those guys are on the cusp of free agency. Like,
yep,
that 2022 class of Walker and Wyatt and Watson and Dobbs and Zach Tom, those guys are all in contract years. Now, if you want to look at 2026 and say, oh, boy, what are they going to do then? I don't know. The one thing that if I was a Packers fan, I would have some apprehension about is that, and again, I really don't want to sound like a Goody hater, because I am not, even though we have not seen eye to eye on a few things. I think he's done a fantastic job. Not as fantastic as Tausch thinks, but a fantastic job. But the one thing I find myself wondering is, are they going to have the mentality essentially that everyone is replaceable and we're not going to pay guys, we're going to be very selective about who we pay, and we're just going to cycle through guys and live with their young mistakes, and then one of these times we're really going to hit on it, and some guys like Edger and Cooper this year are going to really explode, and we're going to win it even without spending. Like, I'm sure he's regretting the money he paid Jair. I'm sure he's regretting the money
right.
he paid Kenny Clark. And if I were to be nervous about anything, it would be that he and the personnel staff, the scouting staff would say, look, all these guys are replaceable. So we'll let Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs walk at the end of their 4th years. And we'll replace them with guys that we draft in the 25 and 26 draft classes, right? Josh Myers, we're going to let him walk, and we'll find somebody else to play center, or we'll move Elton Jenkins, or whatever we'll do. Now, I don't think they should do that with Zach Tom, who didn't have a great night tonight, but he was dealing with injuries all season. I still think he's a very good player. But I do find myself wondering if that will be good. That's one of the things I want to really see how it plays out over the next couple of years, because I just keep thinking back to the conversation I had with him last year about the success they had and whether that solidified his belief in what he, because he'd always told me it's a young man's game. And I just wonder if he's going to think not only is it a young man's game, but there's more young men coming. So we'll just replace these somewhat young guys with new young guys and not overpay these guys and let them go play somewhere else. And more often than not, you're probably right, but ask Joe Shane in New York if he was right to say, well, we don't need to pay Xavier McKinney, we'll get somebody else. Because every once in a while, there are players that either you make sure you pay because you can't live without them, or you regret not paying them because they go on to play and do great things elsewhere.
All right, Jason, we have two issues to address here, not issues to talk about. The injury report presented by Orthopedic Associates of Wisconsin, there is a difference. A lot of bad, or we just don't know how bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Josh Myers talked to Rob Domofsky, who's obviously in Philly. It was scary, obviously. He got carted off with a leg injury. Early returns are that he avoided a torn ACL. In fact, it's not his knee or his ankle, even though it looked that way in real time. Instead, the doctors told him that they think he's got perhaps a hairline fracture of his tibia or fibula. So that's certainly certainly nobody wants that, but it's certainly better than the other possibilities. Elgton Jenkins with a stinger, that'll go away, but he doesn't have any more games to play this season, and his absence was rough. Jaden Reed said he tried to go back in, or tried to convince them to let him go back in, but he just was feeling way too much pain in that shoulder. So again, that's not a long-term injury. The one that I have, obviously, major questions about is now Romeo Doubs has suffered two concussions. He suffered one on November 24th against the 49ers and missed the next two games. Now he's been wearing this guardian cap, which is supposed to add an extra layer of protection for your brain, and he was in really rough shape as they helped him off the field. I was talking to Zane Anderson this week. Not as a reporter, just as I told him, just someone who was, you know, worried about his health. And he still hadn't cleared the concussion protocol. And so he missed two games. Like that. That's the scary stuff, is when guys aren't able to play again because they can't pass the concussion tests, or they experience another concussion in somewhat short order. So in Romeo's case, you know, two concussions in about 6 weeks. Zane Anderson had only had one other concussion in his life. It was in college at BYU. But when recovery takes a while, that's when you get super nervous. So, you know, again, I don't know what the future holds for Romeo. It was obviously a really difficult year on a number of levels for him. That's a pretty significant injury. And I don't know what to expect for him moving forward, because you would think he took the precaution, like, you know, those guardian caps, they kind of make you look ridiculous, but it doesn't matter how you look. You're trying to protect your brain. And the fact that he suffered another concussion is not great.
The postgame injury report presented by Orthopedic Associates of Wisconsin. There is a difference. Visit orthowisconsin.com today. Excuse me.
You don't have to get all emotional about it.
Yeah, I did. Because I feel like I should be the concussion expert for everyone. I could see him, ask him five questions and tell you what's really going on. And it's really not that hard. And when you get a bad one, it's bad, and everybody knows it. I think the teams could solve this problem very easily without all that they do to make everybody feel like they care. The Boucher Automotive. The drive of the game. You only got one, I think. This one, do we have any choice? The Boucher Automotive drive of the game?
Yeah, no, it's got to be obviously the one touchdown drive they had. And look, Josh Jacobs did all the heavy lifting. I mean, again,
they got within six. They're within six with 14:56 to go.
Damn. Yeah, I mean, it was. And then, I mean. Look, Josh Jacobs is the real deal. I think we all know that. That's not super insightful for me. But that run was just, I think it's Kyle Brandt that does his angry runs on Good Morning Football. That was an angry run. It was really impressive. And, you know, him and McKinney, you know, you get more guys like that on your team, whether you draft them and develop them or take them from teams that are too stupid to keep them. That's how you get to where you want to go as a team. And he did all the heavy lifting on that drive. And they just, you know, they did have a couple of other drives. I mean, right, they had the one where they failed on fourth down, where Malik Heath, you know, LaFleur kind of threw him under the bus about how he didn't get his feet in. I mean, again, that was a Jordan Love throw that wasn't super accurate. Like, if he puts the ball on him like he's supposed to, he is in bounds. So, you know, there's a little bit of both going on there. So, you know, that was a promising drive that obviously ends with the failure there when the game is still a possibility. Now you got me getting all emotional. So it's got to be the touchdown drive, the only one they got in a 22-10 loss. And, of course, the drive of the game is brought to you by Boucher Automotive, where we ride with you every mile, especially at the Greenfield Nissan dealership. My guys take such great care of us. I could not be more thankful for Mike Hansen and Scott Foote and the whole team over there. They have taken great care of us. I think we're on our fourth and fifth Nissan vehicles from them over the last decade plus. They are always there for us, and they're there for everybody because that's what they do. They ride with you every mile.
And your final comment of the season. You have one paragraph left because I'm about to fall asleep because this is way past my bedtime.
I want
to know, given that limitation, what do you feel that you want to say most about this year and this team?
Yeah, I mean, look, I have certainly said a lot for a show that was supposed to end at 10, and it's now 10:24. But I think the biggest thing that I would say is, it is not my job to tell you how to be a fan. I learned long ago when I said that I thought the Bears still suck chant was a bad thing. But that does not go over well, telling people how to be fans. So that is not what I'm doing. But if you are open to a small piece of advice from someone who has covered 29 football seasons, and next year will be year 30 on the beat. Thankfully, I started when I was a very... It's not... All is not lost. I know it feels that way tonight. I still think that this team's arrow is pointed in the right direction. And they don't pay me. You know, I don't work for Packers.com. They wanted me to once upon a time, but I don't, that's not where I work. That is not who signs my paycheck. So I don't have to put a happy face on their loss. And I don't think that's what I'm doing. What I am saying is that I think there's a lot to feel really good about as a Packers fan. I do. And I think Jordan Love, while everyone was crowning him as him and all the other accolades, he's still got a ways to go. And we have to acknowledge that. But I think he can get there. I don't think he'll ever be as good as the other two guys. I don't think he's going to Canton. I think he'll be in the Packers Hall of Fame, as you predicted the moment he became the quarterback. I don't think Matt LaFleur is Vince Lombardi or Bill Belichick. But I don't think he's as bad of a coach as Packers fans are thinking he might be right now. Is it possible that he will be, as you so eloquent, I still think this is one of your smarter observations, is it possible that he will be a Steve Mariucci who wins a lot of games but never wins a Super Bowl?
They are in exactly the same situation the 49ers let go of Mariucci after 6 years with almost exactly the results. And history says they made a mistake because it just got worse for a while.
No doubt. But I do think that he is a better coach than it feels like he is tonight. And so you can be frustrated and definitely be critical. As a fan, you're the one who's paying the freight. You're buying the tickets. You're buying the jerseys. You're getting the horse collar kielbasa at the concession stand and buying the $12 beers. So you have every right to be disappointed and frustrated and mad and all the feelings you feel. I'm not telling you that those are invalid. What I am telling you is when you take a beat, maybe have a meal, take a deep breath. I think you'll see that there's still a lot of good that comes from this season. They still took a step forward. It was not a giant leap like you were hoping for, but I still think they took a step forward. And I think there is all kinds of opportunity ahead for them this offseason to do some really cool things with their roster, for them to retool their offense and say, okay, if Josh Jacobs likes us to run the football this way, then what are we going to do to make our passing game off of it more effective? So Matt LaFleur and his staff, I don't think they need to fire a bunch of people. I think they need to be better. And I think they have to get creative and be thoughtful and work their tails off this offseason. I think they got the real deal finally as a defensive coordinator. I think they have the best defensive coordinator that they've had since Dom Capers was in his heyday in 09 and 10. But I think they've got some field-tilting players on that side of the ball. I think Edgerrin Cooper is going to be one. I think Xavier McKinney is going to be one or already are. I think Evan Williams is going to be one. But they've got some personnel things to do on that side of the ball as well. They got to figure out how to pressure the passer. It would appear that for all the great things Goody has done, I don't think Rashawn Gary's good enough, and I don't think Lucas Van Ness at this point has given us any reason to think he's going to be good enough. So they got to get better rushing the passer. They got to figure out what they're going to do at corner, but all is not lost. So be angry and disappointed and frustrated tonight and even tomorrow and maybe even the next day, and heck, you can take all the way to the Super Bowl on February 9th, but at some point take a deep breath and say, you know what? There's some real opportunity here. This team can get a lot better, and I think it will.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, Homer, good night. Take care. Be good.
Good night. Not exactly. We got a couple other things to do. It hasn't changed. Packers lost 22-10. Next.